Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're taking a look at those aches and pains and sprains and strains that develop. Well, they develop all times of the year, but seems like spring sometimes is actually a kind of a bad time. Maybe it's because we've been sitting around more than we should in the winter, and with 100 or so inches of snow on the ground, I know that limited a lot of people's activity. And so, I guess what? Our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, are here to help straighten you out.
You bet we are.
That's our goal.
And you know, you were right on, Larry, because Saturday, it was snowing. Yeah. It was snowing here on Saturday. And Wednesday, it's supposed to be 72 degrees. Well, I tell you, I thought we were out of the woods. And Saturday, I went out and I filled my bird feeders. And I slipped on the hillside because of the grass was so wet and muddy and then had a little bit of snow on top of it. And I slipped and fell. And I thought, good grief, now I'm going to slip and fall. Now it's April, I'm going to slip and fall. I'm going to get hurt because I let my guard down.
Right.
But in the mornings, you know, where the water has seeped up through the pavement overnight because of all the rain. You know, these cold nights, there are some spots it's icy yet, so still be aware. If you're out there early in the morning running, watch out for ice yet.
Yeah, Larry, you're right. Each season brings its own hazards.
Yeah.
And including springtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, it looks like there's no shortage of problems to deal with. We have three of our four lines filled right now.
That's why we're here.
Let me give the number. It's 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 if you'd like to join in. And Barb in Madison is up first. Hi, Barb.
Good morning. Talk about lower back pain and what to do about it and when to seek medical care and what kind of yard work to avoid. Lifting pots and so on aggravates mine.
Okay. All right, well, a couple of questions, and good questions, Barb, that you bring forth. First of all, low back pain is relatively common. I mean, everybody has a backache at some point in their life, and usually multiple times during their lifetime. When to be worried enough to seek care is if the episodes are becoming more and more frequent, they're more severe. They're not related to a fall like Lori described before or heavy lifting, so they seem to be coming on their own. It's a bit of a warning sign that there may be, whether it's muscle weakness or maybe a little bit of degeneration, that is progressing. Another warning sign is if you start having symptoms moving into your leg or legs that seem to be coming from your back, especially any numbness, tingling, sharp shooting pain, then you have to worry about a nerve getting irritated. And then you want to be seen when you start experiencing symptoms like that. In terms of yard work, yeah, just talking about the seasonal hazards, the yard work and gardening can be hazardous to one's back, just like shoveling can be hazardous to one's back in the wintertime. So if you have anything that's heavy or awkward, in an ideal world, you get some help. You get a second pair of hands to help you lift that or move that. If it's possible, if you have a dolly where you can roll something heavy to the spot where it's going to be planted or where it's going to end up, also can certainly help as well. A big thing is, you know, during the wintertime is to try to stay in shape, try to stay active and do some exercise so that the yard work and gardening isn't your first big blast of activity after 3-4 months of inactivity.
Well, the good news is we had a lot of shoveling this winter to help get us in shape for our shoveling in the garden this year.
Right.
But if you haven't done shoveling, if you've been wise enough to hire someone to do that for you, someone young and healthy who needs a little extra cash, then when you go out there this week because the weather's so beautiful, take it easy. Don't try to get your whole garden cleaned up or your whole yard cleaned up in one day. Do several short bouts and take a break in between.
All right.
And one of the best purchases I think I ever made was a wheelbarrow. You know, carrying stuff from the front of the house to the back of the house, mulch and all that business. It's really, really handy, and they're not too expensive anymore.
No, they're not. That's the perfect example of, you know, using technology, wheels. Wheel was invented for a reason, and it can save a lot of wear and tear on our backs.
Good luck, Barb. Thank you. And Mike in Greenville is next. Hi, Mike.
Hello. I have a question concerning what I've heard it referred to as tennis elbow. Started approximately 2 weeks ago. Somewhat better, but as soon as I exert any force on it, it flares up again. What causes it, and what I could maybe do to make it go away, and I'll take my answer on the air.
But Mike, before you go, can you tell me how it started?
Starting to do yard work is starting to do projects outside.
Okay, yeah. All right. So tennis elbow usually comes about as the result of an increase in activity, particularly activities requiring excessive gripping with your hand, or excessive wrist work. So holding tools, using screwdrivers, using anything where you have to grip like a pruner's, which is big this time of year because you're trying to get your trees pruned, that can cause tennis elbow. And what it is it's an inflammation or overuse problem of the origin of the muscles that work at your wrist. But the origin of that muscle is at your elbow. That's why it's called tennis elbow. But typically, elbow motions don't bother it. It's the associated wrist movement that is the problem. So the treatment is focused actually at the wrist. So we can get you a wrist splint, a little immobilization. You can go to a drugstore and just get a little splint that immobilizes your wrist and use it anytime you're doing any heavy work. Try to limit the amount of gripping or pruning kind of work that you're doing. If you are doing that again, use the splint because that helps give those muscles a little bit of a rest. We do stretching exercises for it, and the typical stretch for this is with your arm held straight out in front of you with your palm facing the floor. Bring your fingers and your wrist down so your hand points down to the floor and stretch. And then finally, you can use some ice after periods of increased activity. You can also use what's called a tennis elbow strap. And that's a strap that goes around your elbow over that muscle. And that helps take some of the load off the point where it inserts into the bone. And that can give you a little bit of relief. But it typically takes continuous, conscientious work at this to help get it better.
One of those gadgets that you put on your elbow, is that, do you get those in a pharmacy or?
I think you can probably get those at a pharmacy. If not, you can look online. You can Google it and see it.
Tennis elbow.
Does it call them a tennis elbow strap?
Tennis elbow strap.
I have seen them at drugstores, yes.
Okay.
Okay. Good luck, Mike. Thank you for calling.
I think that suggests how common the problem is.
Yeah. Jan in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I've got another hard fall, this time on the right hip. Did it in February, didn't heal. I have difficulty walking. Months later, because I believe usually the body heals itself, I went to the doctor, had an x-ray of the pelvis and right hip, no breaks or cracks. For 2 weeks, I was on aspirin and a heating pad three times daily. Slight improvement, but do you have any advice? Could a PT help, or is there alternative therapy that might be available?
Yeah, I think considering how long it has been, Jan, and what you have tried, if it's It should be at least 50% to 70% better at this point in time. And the fact that it's not, I think seeing a physical therapist could help quite a bit. It may be, if it's feasible schedule-wise, and if you had access to a pool, you might be able to do a fairly aggressive exercise program in there to speed up the recovery. If not, there's other exercises that can be provided. There's also some education they might be able to help you with in terms of activities to avoid.
That's good.
To minimize the stress on that hip so, again, that the speeding process can be sped up.
Okay. You know,
the other thing that a physical therapist could offer is a really thorough evaluation to ensure that the problem is actually originating at your hip. Because with a fall, you could have actually stirred up some problems in your back, and it's referring to your hip. And so all the interventions directed right at your hip may be unsuccessful because that's not the source of your symptoms.
Hmm. I see.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks, Jan. Joan in Belleville, on to you. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I have heard you talk before about people call in with their Achilles issues, and I can't remember what it was called or what you said to do about it, but I've been having that for a long time, and actually my son has it too, and we both have very flat feet, and our chiropractor said it's due to that, but I almost wonder if there is something else going on too, where when you first, you know, get out of bed and when you first get up from out of the car or sitting down, it can just be, we both kind of struggle those first, you know, steps getting
it. Is the pain behind your ankle and that thick tendon, or is it underneath your heel?
No, it's behind the ankle on that, yeah.
On the tendon?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's just, I mean, it's it's hot. It just really hurts to touch it.
And is it one side or both?
It's both.
Okay.
It's both.
And it's been going on for how long?
Years.
Ooh. Okay.
Oh.
Okay. If it's hot and warm to the touch, that's a sign of an inflammation.
I don't mean like hot, temperature hot. I just mean
but quite painful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sensitive.
But the longer a tendon problem, a tendinosis has been going on, the harder it is to treat. So the fact that it's been going on for years means there's not going to be an easy fix for you. So I think what you're going to need is a good evaluation. The physical therapist can provide you with that. And look at your flat feet. Your flat feet would certainly contribute to it.
Uh-huh.
Because as your Achilles tendon comes down and your foot goes into its flat-footed position, it actually torques on that tendon a little bit and rotates it.
Uh-huh.
And there's a portion of it that has a very poor blood supply, and it happens to be right where it turns. So if you turn excessively, it's like wringing out a washcloth, and it makes that area really susceptible to degeneration. What you may actually be dealing with is a degenerated tendon. So then there are a number of strategies to deal with that. You might benefit from an arch support that does support your arch to decrease some of that torque on the tendon, combined with a heel lift to take some of the stress and strain off of the tendon. Then that should be combined with a stretching and strengthening program, as well as possibly some deep tissue, what we call counter friction massage right in the area where you have the inflammation to break up some localized scar tissue. But you'd really need a good evaluation to determine which are the right interventions for you.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. We've got an email. And by the way, you can email us with your questions at talk@wpr.org. And that's exactly what Abby did with some knee strain. Here's what she says. I'm a regular runner and have always had problems with my left knee making crunching noises. It doesn't give me constant pain, but when I bend my knee, even walking upstairs, it crunches and makes horrible noises, sort of like tearing. Others have told me it's probably tendonitis, but in the past I've been taking long periods of time off from running and it never seems to get any better. Since I've started training for a marathon, the knee noises have gotten worse and I feel pain more often after my long runs. Any idea what might be causing this crunching sounds and any suggestions as to how I might resolve it?
Mm-hmm. The snap, crackle, pop of our joints. The typically snap, crackle, pop, this or that, we don't pay a lot of attention to unless it's associated with pain, because everyone's joints make noise, mm-hmm. some more than others. But given her history of pain associated with that, the fact that it's one knee makes me think that there's something more amiss in that one than the other one, and the fact that she's having more pain now that she's training for the marathon. The most likely culprit is her kneecap, and it's not unusual at all for people to have crepitation. We call it, that's the medical term for it, underneath the kneecap, as the kneecap tracks across the underlying bone below it. Particularly in females, the weakness around the hip girdle is strongly associated with patellofemoral symptoms, being slightly knock-kneed, being flat-footed. So it's a fairly common postural problem that we see in females, particularly female runners. So it would probably be in her best interest, given that she's training for a marathon, to see a physical therapist. And I don't know where she lives, but there are places where they specialize in, they have runners' clinics, where they have people who specialize in biomechanical analyses, and they can take a look at your running gait, your posture, and so on, and prescribe specific exercises to improve her posture, improve the alignment at her knee, and minimize that tracking problem that she has. So patellofemoral pain, specific strengthening, particularly around the hip girdle, hip external rotators.
Yeah. And Lori's right. These noises are not unusual. Same thing in the spine. And generally, as long as that noise isn't associated with a sharp catch, a pinch, a shooting pain, or the joint locking up, it's not unusual. But what Abby describes is something that's progressive in nature, and mm-hmm. she plans to run the marathon. probably an evaluation sooner than better would be a good idea.
All right. Good luck, Abby. Thank you very much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. Our guest today, I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a pain or a strain, we hope you'll join in here with our conversation. Larry Mueller here with my guests Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault from the University of Wisconsin. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And Kay in Madison is next. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I wanted to call just to give you some feedback. In the last couple months when you've been on, I've called and asked a question. I'm the one that went to Spain for 3 weeks and walked so much I could hardly walk once I got home.
I remember that conversation, Kay.
Well, based on what you suggested the first time, I did ask my doctor for some physical therapy, a referral, and saw a physical therapist several times and got some exercises. And last month when you were on, you did make another comment about using orthotics, if you had really flat feet, that it might help if there was knee pain.
Yes.
So I started using my orthotics again, which I had neglected for a couple years, and my knee pain is virtually gone. And so I just wanted to thank you for being helpful. I really was listening.
Oh, that's great.
We love that.
Okay, it's helping you ready for another trip.
Right, right. Well, I did want to ask one question, because if and when I go on another trip and walk much more than usual, I intend to take along a portable cane, a collapsible cane, just in case I have some problems while I'm on the trip. And do you use a cane in the right, on the same side as the hurt knee, or on the other side?
It goes on the opposite side.
On the opposite side, yeah,
of the hurt. Injured. So if it's your left knee, it goes on the right side.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It broadens your base of support and makes you more stable.
Okay.
But realize an important thing about a cane is that it really can't relieve any more than about 20% of your body weight. A cane isn't really designed to offload weight. A cane is designed to help improve your balance and to help you keep people away from yourself so they don't knock you over. But they don't really relieve much of your body weight.
Okay. Right. Okay.
So, okay,
well,
sure.
Hopefully I wouldn't need it again, but just in case. So.
No, it's good to have it.
Yeah.
It'll help a little bit. And it'll help improve your balance, keep you more stable, and that in and of itself can help keep your pain down.
And make sure you bring your orthotics with you and a couple really good pairs of shoes that are broken in a bit.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I did buy some Naot, the ones made in Israel, and those seem to be real good for me. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks
thank
a lot.
You, Kay.
And that's nice to hear. Vivian in Luxembourg, it's your turn. Hi, Viv.
Hi, Larry. Hey, thanks for this and all your programs.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, and thanks, folks, for being on. I'm a longtime athlete. I'm 6 years old. I've always done things when I was younger. And in the last 4 years, I took up swimming, lap swimming for distance, and indoors in the winter, and outdoors as soon as I can. And the last couple of years, I took up kayaking. Well, for the last couple months, and it's now starting to get a little worse, so this program is very timely, I have quite a bit of pain in my right shoulder, and it seems when I'm rotating it, and I really try not to rotate a lot, because I know about the rotator cuff injuries, but it's kind of clicking. You don't hear it. I feel it kind of like bone on bone, it feels like. And I also, it seems like my right side of my body, it's very painful at night. If I lay on my right side of my body, particularly the shoulder, and I seem to have some what I call hot spots, like from my right side of my neck, and then, of course, the shoulder thing, and then down towards my buttocks and what have you at night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Uh-huh. And it started pretty much at your shoulder?
Yeah, it seems to have started at my shoulder, although I think I've had some sciatica problems. That might be another issue. But the shoulder thing has really worsened in the last couple weeks. Last night was, and I don't like to take medication, so last night was a constant moving around kind of miserable thing. And I intended to call the doctor this week, so
okay.
It's just timely.
Okay. Well, in your age and demographic, I would expect that you have some rotator cuff tendinosis. So I wasn't sure about your comment where you said that you were trying to minimize rotation because you know about the rotator cuff.
Because well, my swim instructor, that's what, you know, rather than bringing your arm all the way up and around,
okay,
you do a little bit less movement to it and bring your, because it's a better swim stance anyway to do a little less high. You know,
okay,
high.
Okay. Right. But remember, your motion has to come from somewhere. It's like pushing down on the tube of toothpaste. You know,
right,
if you push down, it comes up someplace else. So if you minimize the rotation at your shoulder, you're going to have to rotate someplace else. And chances are you're rotating at your spine. So that may account for some of the symptoms you're having other places.
Uh-huh.
So you're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Oh, gotcha.
So you really need somebody to take a good look at you and your stroke to kind of untangle this mess.
Okay.
And I'm not sure where you're located, but we, for example, here at our facility, we have someone who specializes, a physical therapist who specializes in swim stroke analysis. So you may find somebody in your area who can do that. Coaches have lots of experience with swim stroke, not always with swim stroke in the presence of pathology. So you need somebody who can look at both those things. So,
that makes total sense.
Yeah. So there's a chance you may have some bone on bone in your shoulder. You may have some arthritis in your AC joint. It's fairly common. You may have some tendinosis or degeneration of your rotator cuff tendon. But it doesn't mean you should ignore that. It means you should try to strengthen the remaining rotator cuff and other muscles to substitute.
Oh, thank you. That makes total sense. I mean, I am going to check it out because.
Okay.
Like I said, a sleepless night was not so good.
Yeah,
you know?
Not
at all.
Can't give up the swimming.
Oh, no.
The kayaking has been wonderful.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. No, you're not heading the right direction, so it's time to get in to see somebody, especially as the weather's getting nice and you want to get out there.
Right.
Exactly.
And
well, thank you so much.
Vivian, one thing when you go in, I mean, the right shoulder seems to be the area that's interfering most with your lifestyle, but make sure that they know there's also some neck symptoms and down into your back. So, I mean, they should be looking at you really from head to toe during the course of the examination.
All right.
Right. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Deb. Josh and Hayward, on to you now. Hi, Josh.
Hello, guys. The older I get, the more I pay attention to this show.
Me too.
Yeah, we understand, Josh.
I kind of have a similar right shoulder question also, but mine's a little different. I swim religiously, and I don't have any trouble. I injured my right shoulder a long time ago playing football, and, you know, just kind of healed on my own, and it's given me little twinges on and off over the years. I try to describe things I can and cannot do. I also shoot a bow and arrow a lot, and I have a new bow that's heavier than what I've shot in the past, and it's hard to explain. I can hold a bucket of water to my side and not have any discomfort at all, but just raising any kind of weight out in front of me, you know, like when you raise a bow and arrow up to draw, and I hold that bow in my right arm, and it just hurts like the dickens. And then once I start drawing the bow and putting pressure on the shoulder, then it doesn't hurt anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the other day I slipped on the ice and I lost my balance, and you know how you kind of whip your arm around. Man, you know, I've been dying ever since I did that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's something weird, and it's just a real particular position. You know, if I try to do anything holding my arm out in front of me, you know, I mean, the pain scale is 8 or 9.
Right. Well, what happens is people think of your rotator cuff as functioning to rotate your shoulder, but actually one of the principal rotator cuff muscles, the supraspinatus, actually stabilizes the humeral head, the ball, if you will, and the ball and socket into the socket, particularly as your arm moves away from your body. So the farther your arm moves away from the body, the longer the lever arm and the more load that's placed on that muscle. So then as you draw the bow, you're actually bringing your shoulder back in, you're flexing your elbow, you're shortening the lever arm. So the load is actually being shifted off of that, and you have different shoulder muscles that are actually doing the drawing. The rotator cuff doesn't do much in that actual activity. It stabilizes. So once you start pulling and you pull in all those other muscles, then it doesn't work so hard. So it sounds to me like a supraspinatus problem, tendinosis, tendonitis kind of a problem.
Is there something I can do in the pool to help that then?
There are strengthening exercises that you can do, and the pool is actually a good place because you can work on the lifting elevation without having to lift your full arm against gravity. Mm-hmm. Swimming may or may not aggravate it depending upon your swim stroke and the efficiency of your swim stroke. I probably wouldn't be pulling right now. In the pool, but maybe using some fins if the swim stroke is bothering you. But I'd get in and see somebody and have them get you up on a program for strengthening that supraspinatus and taking a closer look and making sure that that's actually what it is.
Okay.
I'm learning all kinds of medical terms, too.
Yeah, how about that?
thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Josh.
Good luck.
Doug in Mount Horeb is up next. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Another great program. Thanks. I was out doing my yard work, Spring Warrior, Euphoria of Spring, and inactive in the wintertime, and I managed to rip my calf muscle. So my topic is how to long-term care for a ripped calf muscle. I'm in pretty good shape, 5'8", 155. I bike 100 Ks. I ripped it. I went into the doctor. I was going uphill, pulling a yard cart full of dirt, so I was pulling it behind me like a horse and wagon. Mm-hmm. Had my toe up, heel down, back of the calf all extended, and I felt this ripping physical sensation in the back. They x-rayed it from the side and the top. They said nothing was detached. The tendons were okay, but they said that there was a muscle tear, possibly a rupture, and that I should just keep it warm in the morning, ice it at night, make sure I move it around, and it'll just get better by itself over time. So I'm just wondering if there's anything else I can do to accelerate the getting better over time part, because right now it doesn't seem like I'm going to be getting back on my bike anytime soon.
Yeah. And so the Achilles tendon itself is intact?
Yes.
Okay.
I have full range of motion. Everything works up, down, sideways, and they said nothing appeared to be detached.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, there are certainly things that you can do, stretching exercises to maintain the mobility of your the muscle tendon unit. Depending upon what muscle was torn and what you're feeling up in your calf, some deep tissue massage to help keep that area loose. If things have been torn and they're healing with scar tissue, you don't want those to scar down. Strengthening exercises for your calf muscles. And tell me what you're feeling in terms of not being able to get on your bike. Does it hurt too much when you push off?
If I put my toe in the raised position on the toe clip, where I've got my heel above my toe, recreating that same extension across the back of my calf muscle, then I can feel the pain up my calf. But it's not so bad that I couldn't bike.
Okay.
I could actually do it, and it would just be painful, but I don't want to make it worse instead
of
better either.
Right.
You know, Doug, and this is a place where I think a physical therapist could help you almost from the standpoint of coaching you and guiding you along the, not just the rehab process, but what's an okay pain to work through, when do you need to back off, and to kind of step up your activity sequentially so you don't cause more damage. And, they could examine you. If you haven't seen a physical therapist already, they could examine you and then give you some good guidance now. And then, you wouldn't be coming in very often, but periodically you come in for a recheck as a way to ramp up your activity, but do it safely.
What's your second opinion on the deep muscle massage? I actually asked a surgeon about doing that who had initially looked at the muscle, and he said, well, for a torn muscle, you want to massage it because you don't want the scar tissue forming. I asked the physical therapist, and the physical therapist said, no, actually, if you get in there and manipulate it too much, you're going to cause a blood pool in a pocket because you're going to be separating muscle fiber, and you don't want that to happen, so don't massage it.
I'd
say it depends upon the acuity. You aren't going to go in and massage it in the acute phase because you could disrupt the healing process. But as you go from the acute to the subacute phase, then it's time to start doing that. So
That's why going back to the physical therapist in situations like these, I have people come back every 2 weeks in the beginning, then maybe every 4 weeks after that, because the program should change. As that area heals, your program should be very different from, every 2 weeks to month to month.
Okay. And you think normal walking is okay? I just went for a long walk yesterday. It was about, 2-3 miles, and it was a little sore, but I could do it.
And then how were you the next day?
My leg got a little bit swollen around the calf, mm-hmm. and I iced that, and then it was back to where it was before. So.
Okay. That's one of the criteria, is that you want it to return back to your baseline after an activity.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Great.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks a lot. Great program.
All right. Appreciate the call. And let's take some more calls. Ron in Menominee is up next. Hi, Ron.
Hi. Say, I'm having some pain in the back of my left knee. About 6 weeks ago, I was doing some yoga classes and kind of overextended one of the moves, and I'll kind of explain the move. You're laying on your stomach with one leg back and the other leg up, and it's called a pigeon wing. So you kind of have your foot out to the side, or flexed and out to the side. And I think I overdid that, and it's been sore. Wondering if there's anything I can do to...
So it's sore behind the knee?
And this was the knee that you had flexed and bent out to the side?
Correct.
Okay. And does it hurt constantly? Is there any swelling?
No swelling. First thing out of bed in the morning is when I notice it the most. When I try even just flexing, putting a sock on, I can feel that. As the day goes on, though, it doesn't seem to bother me as much.
Okay. You know, it could have been a strain of one of the muscles behind your knee as you rotated out to the side, and the muscle had to control that flexing, rotating knee. It could have been a slight sprain of the joint capsule in the area. There's no swelling involved. The first thing that I think of when I think of pain behind the knee is a meniscus tear, because that's usually where that hurts. But it doesn't sound like that probably happened. But you may have just strained or sprained some soft tissue back there. If it seems like it's getting better, I'd probably just continue with icing it and keeping an eye on it and avoiding that move in yoga for a little while and see how it goes. If it's not getting better over the next couple of weeks, then you may think about going in to see somebody. But if it's a soft tissue sprain or strain, you know, over the course of 7 to 14 days, you should be feeling quite a bit better.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Ron. The fact that you are on your stomach and in moving your limbs as opposed to being on your feet, mm-hmm. and slip or that your knee collapses on you, then I'd be worried more about something structurally inside your knee. But, you know, you're in a relatively safe position. And so it sounds like as you do better as the day goes on, I'm assuming you're doing some walking and you're on your feet. So, you know, that suggests, again, that there isn't anything major structurally happening.
Okay, and then icing is the best remedy at night then?
Yeah, probably at the end of the day after you've been on your feet all day.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks
Beth,
a lot for
luck.
Calling. Yeah, good luck. Don in Minneapolis is up next. Hi, Donald.
Well, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem with my ankle. I hurt it about a week and a half ago, and it's getting better now, but it kind of troubles me because I don't understand what happened. And about 6 months ago, I had almost an identical episode. So it was about a week and a half ago, and I was playing racquetball, and I had a little bit of pain on the inside of my ankle. Nothing severe, no kind of traumatic sprain or stretch or anything that you know, was traumatic. But the next day, it was quite sore. It was very difficult to walk. And then over the course of the next week, it moved from the inside of my ankle around the back to my Achilles tendon, and then eventually worked its way all way over to the right side and then started getting better. And I did, as I said, I did the same thing about 6 months ago after doing kind of a long session on a Stairmaster machine.
Hmm.
So you have pain the next day when you get out of bed that's on the inside, then it moves to the back to the Achilles.
Right, and it just moves kind of day by day. It moves a little bit more towards the back of the Achilles until it's there, mm-hmm. and then it continues to move over to the other side, to the outside of the ankle,
mm-hmm.
and then once it gets there, it starts improving.
Mm-hmm. Well, boy, it sounds like some sort of overuse problem. You played racquetball too long, too hard. the first thing that comes to mind is your shoes weren't fitting well and you had too much movement of your foot in your shoe.
Okay.
And all the soft tissues, the tendons on the inside of your ankle, your Achilles on the outside of your ankle, we're just working overtime to stabilize your foot. Maybe your foot has some hypermobility, maybe you're a little flat-footed, but that's my first inkling about why you're having symptoms.
Okay, but so that would be expected then to have the pain move, you know, from one side of the ankle to the other during the course of this?
It may, or it may be that it's just worse in one area and you don't really realize it.
Okay.
It is one possibility.
Okay.
But
and what would I do to prevent that? You're saying maybe the shoes are an issue.
Maybe the shoes aren't the right kind of shoe, have the right kind of last for your foot style.
Uh-huh.
It may be that you need, that you, for example, have a narrow heel that needs some stability, like a heel cup, to give it more stability in the shoe.
Okay.
As a possibility. In the absence of seeing you and examining your foot, these are just sort of ideas that are coming to my head as a possibility. If you're spending a lot of time on your toes, then you could be overworking a lot of the muscles that stabilize your rear foot when you're up on your toes, and those would be the muscles in the inside and outside and rear around your heel. So it could be that too. It sounds like this happened when you had an extra long session, so it sounds somewhat like an overuse.
Was there a way to prevent it? Or see, the thing is, it was very difficult. I was able to walk, but you know, with a lot of pain during this. But it wasn't like I had much of a clue that anything was going wrong until the next day.
Mm-hmm. Well, you would have to watch for a pattern,
First
of all, to see if there's a certain amount of time. Second of all, you could do strengthening exercises for your foot and ankle. And probably for you, a toe raise is as good as anything because it's going to get some of the muscles on the inside, the outside, and the back.
Okay.
And in the absence of any additional equipment, such as elastic bands or pulleys or something, that would probably work just as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Don, since it's the second episode, it sounds like your goal is to stay active, is to see a therapist and have them examine your feet up into the knee and above the knee and see what they can find in terms of weakness or tightness and bring your shoes in that you've been wearing when you do play
okay.
racquetball. And then they can do a detailed biomechanical analysis of your foot and ankle region. You may need an orthotic in addition to good footwear. And those would be the things that come to mind in terms of preventing this from coming back again or trying to find an explanation as to why it's happening in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'll try that. I'll try the strengthening the joint a little bit and look to my shoes and see if it happens again.
All right, good luck. Thanks, Don,
Thanks,
for calling.
Don.
Appreciate it very much. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking pains and sprains and strains, and what else have we talked about? Aches. That's the other one. That's the other one. I always have trouble remembering that one. With our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. Linda emailed us and says, I have been diagnosed with CRPS and now found 3 bruises or dark patches on my brain from an MRI. I fell in 2005 at work on an icy sidewalk, hit my whole right side, and bounced my head off the sidewalk. Could this turn into blood clots or MS? This may be beyond your...
Some of it I can address. CRPS is chronic regional pain syndrome. They used to call it RSD, or reflex sympathetic dystrophy. And basically what happens is there is an injury or a trauma that in most people would heal and resolve over time. But in a certain segment of the population, the pain control centers, and I'm not sure where it comes from, but it's probably a combination of locally at the injury site, centrally at the spinal cord, and at the brain level, where the pain control centers essentially go haywire and they get chronic pain that originates at the original injury site and then tends to expand throughout the region and sometimes to that entire side of the body. So it's a very difficult problem to deal with. It's usually managed by a pain clinic, and they have a team of professionals that work with them. There are a number of interventions that physical therapists try to help prevent the spread of CRPS throughout the body. So that's response to that. In terms of will it turn into MS, no. No, there's no association between CRPS and MS. So I can address that. In terms of the spots on her MRI, she'd need to talk to her physician about that. I don't know what the bruises on her brain scan were.
All right. Let's go to Nancy in Ladysmith next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce this word right or not, but it's called the SI joint or the cigarette. Mm-hmm. You'd know what the term is, but I've been bothered with mine for about 2 years. I've been to 2 chiropractors and 2 doctors, and they say no arthritis, and I do all these exercises, but nothing gets better. You know, and I'm at a point they don't know what to do other than keep taking pain medication, you know.
Okay. Nancy, the pain that you have, is it one side, both sides?
One.
Is that sciatica, by the way, the sciatic nerve? Or?
Well, no, the sacroiliac joint.
Oh, sacroiliac.
Right. It's kind of the junction between the hip bone and the sacrum, and it's right below the waistline. And we have one on each side. The sciatic nerve, if it gets irritated in the pelvis, it's usually lower. It's called a sciatic notch. So they're all kind of in the same neighborhood. And see, the pain that you had, does it move down into your leg at all?
Yes, it goes, I mean, it comes and goes. I mean, I never know when it's going to hit, and then sometimes it's like a shooting sharp pain where it actually brings my knee up, and the other, sometimes it's just I can feel it coming. It gets really, really warm feeling, and I can feel it coming, like, through my butt and down my lower leg, and if I hang on right there, it kind of stops, but then it stays up in the thigh muscle.
Okay. Does it ever go below the knee?
Once in a while, if I'm doing something and can't really start rubbing it, you know.
Okay.
But, I mean, sometimes it hangs right around, like, the back of the calf or even along the shin bone. Sometimes it actually gets down right to the bottom of my foot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, a couple things then. One, the sacroiliac joint, it can be a pain generator. It can cause back pain and pain down to the leg. It's relatively unusual to cause pain below the knee, and rarely it will extend down into the foot. So when symptoms go that far down toward the foot and the toes, then oftentimes the problem is more in the lumbar spine and not the sacroiliac joint. So I don't know if the people that you saw who treated you, if they addressed some of the treatment up into the lumbar spine or not, but that would be a recommendation. There's sometimes, to help decide is it sacroiliac joint or not, there are sacroiliac joint belts or supports, and sometimes stabilizing the joint will take some pressure off the ligaments that are supporting the joint that oftentimes are the pain generator. So I don't know if anybody tried a stabilizing belt.
Yes, I do wear one, but trouble is it shuts the blood off in my legs.
Yeah, okay. Well, that can be a problem, especially especially when you're sitting, it can dig in. Well, I guess if my recommendation would be if all the attention is paid to your SI joint after 2 years and the symptoms you described, I'd be thinking the pain is probably coming up above from there in the lumbar spine and not the sacroiliac joint. It's much more common. The back and leg pain much more commonly associated with the lumbar spine than the sacroiliac joint.
Okay, because it doesn't always go down below the knee. Depending what I'm doing, like just say like I'm driving and I don't have it in cruise, you know, then it will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you know, there are exercises that we incorporate that are designed specifically to get pain out of the leg and keep it out of the leg, and until that happens, the pain up high is not going to go away. And sitting, sitting can stress the SI joints to a degree, but usually puts more pressure on that low lumbar area and some of the discs. And with people with SI joints tend to have considerable problem with stairs and walking where there's more torque or torsion going through those joints.
Best when I'm walking.
Yeah, it's best when you're walking. Okay.
Yeah, I would consider, if you haven't seen a physical therapist, that's my recommendation. Have them take a close look at your back, your lumbar spine, along with the pelvic area, and see what they can come up with for you.
Yeah, you know, sometimes the problem when you get a, quote, diagnosis is then everyone's perspective or their evaluation is filtered by that information, and sometimes you just forget to look elsewhere.
Yeah. So good luck to you, Nancy, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll take some more calls. Richard in Barnes is up next. Hi, Richard.
Hello. Say, I had an operation on my knee over a year ago, and it was a torn meniscus.
Mm-hmm.
And the surgeon operated on it, and at the post-op, I told him that it felt like my knee would pop out before I had this operation, and it would be painful.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that, no, I was just imagining that because with this torn meniscus being repaired, that won't happen again. And so periodically, like once every 2 weeks, my knee pops out. It has very little or no pain to it, but I'm wondering whether I need to do something else or just live with a knee popping out periodically.
Can you describe to me what happens when your knee pops out?
Well, it sort of locks up and
okay.
It starts painful, and then I move it back into another position and it pops back in.
Okay, so it locks up and then you have to sort of manipulate it around to get it to unlock?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Well, that can still happen, even after they've... Did they repair or did they remove the torn meniscus?
They cut them out.
Yeah, okay. Even after they do that, you can still have some catching and locking in your knee that you no longer have a smooth surface between your joint and the meniscus. The meniscus has been changed and altered, and sometimes there's, you know, a rough edge that catches or something. You can still have that happen in your knee after a meniscectomy or after they've taken the meniscus out. Did you see a physical therapist at all after your surgery?
Yes, and I did all the exercises, and my knee is strong.
Okay.
And I still do stretching and yoga.
Okay.
So.
Okay. I'd continue with that. And, you know, can you predict when this is going to happen? You get in a certain position or you can feel it in your knee?
Almost, but I tend not to get into where I twist it.
Beautiful. Yeah. Twisting is going to be hard on it. So, you know, the question is whether or not you want to go in and have another surgery. There's probably not much that can be done for that locking conservatively. Something in there is getting caught. So unless you want to go back in and consider having someone else go in there and see what else is going on, it may be best to live with it as long as it's not associated with a lot of pain and swelling each time it happens.
Oh, that's great. That's what I wanted to hear.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Turia in Wadsworth, Illinois is up next. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering if you could help me. Thank you for taking my call first off. I'm a runner. I've probably been a runner on and off all my life. I did my first marathon last October. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but come around November, the muscles in my legs, well, it's also a little bit in my arms, too, will burn. And it's not, you know, I can go out and run 6 miles, 18 miles, whatever, and they're fine. But if I go up a flight of stairs, like 15, 14, 15 steps, I've counted them, my leg muscles burn so bad that I almost want to go into a laughing fit about it, and it almost, like, drops me to my knees. Now, I have actually been going to the doctor on and off. Matter of fact, I was just there today because they were thinking they were looking at the arterial, seeing if there was any blockages. So I was just there today, and they're trying to rule out all these things, but they don't know what was causing it. I've been to two different doctors. The second one was just sure it was because I was dehydrated and had me up my water to three quarts a day. So I was drinking all this water, and I did it for 2 months, and it still does not alleviate the problem. And but they feel so fatigued. I mean, does that have something to do with lactic acid or not enough? Is it a dietary thing? Do you have any idea?
Wow, you're really stretching my brain today. I don't know if I can answer that question without a pot of coffee.
So the first doctor that I had gone to, because I had kind of developed a little respiratory thing over the summer with some asthma where okay, I would take a shot of this inhaler and that I'd be able to run just fine. And she thought, well, maybe you're just not getting enough oxygen in, and that's why your legs are fatigued. So they put me on this asthma cort or something that I was on for a couple months. That did absolutely nothing. Now, this Friday, I'm also scheduled for a stress test. And,
okay.
And it's like, it does.
Okay.
I don't have any chest pain. It's like I just ran 20 miles on Sunday, but why can I go up a flight of stairs and they burn?
Well, let me ask this. Before the marathon, when you went up a flight of stairs, did your legs burn like that?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay, so something happened in the marathon to do this. And did you drink a lot of water in the marathon?
Probably an average amount.
Okay.
Probably a little bit less than average,
okay.
Because I did stop at all of the stations.
Okay. That's probably sufficient. You know, one of the issues is hyperhydration and washing out the electrolytes, having an electrolyte imbalance due to hyperhydration. So it doesn't sound like that's an issue. I don't know. I don't have any great insights into this other than something happened, I would say, metabolically at the muscle level during the marathon. And I think it's reasonable for your physicians to continue to pursue this and figure out what it is that it might be. And even though you have no chest pain, I would still follow this course of evaluation and get to the bottom of this because you don't want it to affect your heart.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests from the University of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're dealing with aches and pains and sprains and strains on the Ideas Network now. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the University of Wisconsin Medical School. And they come by about once a month to talk with us about all those nasty little pains that we manage to come up with from time to time. Certainly, I know we have questions about left knee replacements. We've got discomforts in ribs. We've got shoulder pain in a husband's shoulder. We've got all kinds of things going on with callers. They're all online waiting to call, waiting to ask their questions. You can do that too by calling this number. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Back after the news. You have a pain or a sprain? I hope you're listening in because we have a couple of experts to answer your questions. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. Certainly, if you have a question for Bill and Lori, I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And David in Middleton is on line, so let's go to David. Hi, David.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I'm calling because a few years ago, I was hit in the neck by a long, high-density gas pipe, and it struck me pretty bad. Since then, my head feels sort of like it's a helmet that's too big. It doesn't fit right on my neck. And occasionally, I get a sharp pain like a knitting needle being shooting right up the back of the left side. But more recently, I've been waking up with my smell and my taste being very off. It's the only way to say it. Like, it's very acute, but very bad. And we keep extremely clean house, so I've been befuddled by why my smell and my taste have become so difficult. And recently, along with that, I've started to get a shoulder right down to the bottom of my leg, pins and needles when I wake up in the morning. Just numb like you've banged your elbow or something on a table.
Okay.
So that's about all of it, but that's pretty much enough.
That's plenty,
David. Exactly. And so how long has the smell and taste differences been going on?
Oh, boy, it's been going on for well over a year now, but it's not every day. It's some days I have it and some days I don't. Sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll have this, and it's very, very strong. Like, it's like an acute issue instead of the opposite type of an issue.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you seen a physician during the past year for these issues?
I did, and he said, you bruised a muscle in your neck. I shouldn't worry about it. It's a little soft tissue damage.
Okay.
And I thought, you know, I think it's gotten more than a little soft tissue damage.
Yeah.
Well, I would agree. You know, going back to the original injury, I'm sure there was some soft tissue damage with what you described happened to you. And, you know, the sensation of the head on neck you described is not unusual post serious head and neck trauma. But the changes in smell and taste and the pins and needles numbness down the entire side, arm, and leg, I mean, all those tie into the nervous system.
I see.
And you need to think up high in terms of what something in your neck or up in the brain that, you know, if you would come in to see me in a clinic, I would see you one visit and say, you need to go back and see your physician, and we'd make it clear what you're coming back for, the smell, the taste, the numbness and tingling, all those put together. That's where I would head back and just make sure that they're hearing you, that those are the issues and how long they've been going on. Sometimes we can experience weird stuff that lasts a day or two and never comes back again, or it was a year and a half ago. You don't worry about that.
David, are you seeing a primary care physician or a specialist?
No, just a primary care physician. I shouldn't say just. He's a wonderful doctor.
Uh-huh. Well, you may, given the magnitude and change in your symptoms, you may think about seeing a neurologist.
Okay.
Who specializes in the nervous system.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, good luck, David.
Yep, good luck.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Tough one.
Nancy, very tough.
Yeah, Nancy in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. My husband was a construction worker for many years, and anyway, his shoulders went to heck, so he went and had some surgery on the one shoulder, and it was better for a little while. It's a lot worse now. He's had two cortisone shots. They told him, you know, you haven't had a rotator cuff for the last 8-10 years at least. They said the only thing that's working your arm is a muscle that goes across the top of your shoulder. So, mm-hmm. Is there any sense to go and have these cortisone shots, or what the heck can happen? You know, you mm-hmm. at night you try to mm-hmm. your arm this way or that mm-hmm. way, everything hurts.
Yeah, indeed. Has your husband seen a physical therapist?
No, they didn't say anything about a physical therapist. They gave him okay. cortisone shots.
Okay.
And
yeah. I would strongly encourage him to go see a physical therapist. The doctor is correct in that he may not have had a functioning rotator cuff for 8 or 10 years, but that doesn't mean that he should live in pain. And typically, the deltoid and some of the other muscles can take over for the function of the rotator cuff. Many people live for many years with no functioning rotator cuff and have no symptoms. But given your husband's long history in construction, he's probably got some arthritis, he's got some bursitis, and some other stuff going on. The cortisone shot helps beat down some of the inflammation. Typically, it's injected into the bursa, and when that shrinks down that bursa, it gives some of the other soft tissues a little more room to work. And so at that point, your therapy can be a little more effective. So a lot of times they give a cortisone shot to help give a boost to the physical therapy so that the exercises have a chance to work. So I would strongly urge your husband to advocate for seeing the physical therapist to see what can be done to help rehabilitate the other muscles around the shoulder girdle. But you're right that ongoing cortisone injections in the absence of structured physical therapy isn't going to get him where he wants to be.
All I can say is for young people, it's a darn good way to make a living. But, boy, when you got two artificial knees already and the shoulders are hurting,
it's
a hard job.
It's a very hard job. Very hard.
Thank you, Nancy. Appreciate your call very much. Boy, Mark in Rice Lake, I believe, is up next. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I've had my knee replaced about 4 years ago, and in the last 2 years, it's developed to where it'll actually give out on me in that knee. I have good range of motion as far as the way the knee should move. It's from negative 6 degrees if I'm laying flat all the way to about 145-degree movement bent in.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a 10 to 12-degree movement left and right where it shouldn't be moving.
Mm-hmm.
Plastic piece inside, every step I take, you can now hear it and feel it catch.
Mm-hmm.
And they called it run-in at first.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm sitting wondering what to do because I need to have the other knee replaced, and I'm under 50 years old yet.
Ay, ay, ay. What did the surgeon say about that rocking side to side?
They
have anything to offer?
Yeah, they're sending me up the chain. I'm now going to the third one, the final surgeon in Madison, to look at it, whether or not to open it up and replace it. Mm-hmm. They're saying put a new piece of plastic in, but it would have to be made bigger than the piece that's in there now that the ACL and the MCL have been stretched.
Yeah, so you're losing some of your stabilizers, some of your static stabilizers. That happens. That can happen over time if you get excessive motion at the knee joint. You know, putting in a total joint is a very, very difficult mechanical process because they have to balance the soft tissues. They have to balance front to back, side to side. They have to balance rotation given whatever soft tissues you have left. So it's not an easy job to do. And then they have to worry about some of the polymers that they use and things wear and whether to use cemented or uncemented. And there's a lot of things to consider. So I would continue to pursue them going up the chain and finding out what can be done for you surgically. In the meantime, keeping yourself strong. You can also talk to them about braces. There might be some braces. It's much easier to stabilize for that medial lateral instability than it is front-to-back instability. So there may be some braces that you can use in the interim to give you some stability. And once you get that sorted out, then you can think about the other knee. But at least you'll have all that information about what happened with the first one for the second knee. Mm-hmm. So they'll be on the lookout for those kinds of problems.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. Good luck.
Appreciate the call. Betty in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Betty.
Hi. Hello. How are you this morning?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Well, I must say after listening to your show that I really don't think what I am troubled with is nearly as major as most of these people. My goodness. To make a very short report, I think it was the weekend of the 22nd or 23rd of March, in sitting on my couch in the evening, I must have gone down slightly crooked or something, and I heard a little bit of a pop and a slight sharp pain in my ribs, so my lower ribs on my right, no, on my left side, right where the little indentation in your, if you run your hand along the lower edge of your ribs, you know there's that little indentation place?
Yep.
It didn't last very long. I shifted my position and it kind of went away. I do fitness twice a week, and my next fitness workout was on Tuesday, the 25th of March. And by 24 hours later, my whole, that whole area from both sides of my ribs, from that indentation on the left all the way over to the indentation on the right and across my middle, like the diaphragm area or something, was sore. And right at those indentations, it was sore to the touch. I didn't do my fitness workout on that Friday. I tried it again the following Tuesday. I was feeling somewhat better. Did the same thing again. So I basically haven't been back to fitness since then. I have been to see my doctor. He took x-rays of the upper chest, the waist-up x-rays, found a bit of degenerative arthritis in my shoulder blades, but he didn't remark on anything in the ribs. It is getting better. What I feel now is basically a tightness, particularly when I get up in the morning, through that area, and off and on during the day, depending on how I move, I will get a little twinge of pain here or there in the ribs on one side or the other. What did I do, and how long before it's going to go away?
Well, I think not doing your workout was a smart move, was a good move. I can't tell you exactly what you may have injured when you sat down on the sofa, but it sounds like either you pulled a muscle or a tendon, or there are lots of small joints that connect the ribs to one another and then connect to the spine as well. And you can sprain those joints like you can sprain an ankle.
Also, they wouldn't show a break on an x-ray.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
It's a joint sprain.
Right.
Okay.
That's correct. So the x-ray was the right thing to do to make sure that there wasn't a fracture. And so I see no reason why you shouldn't continue to improve. It could maybe take another, you know, couple weeks yet, 2 to 3 weeks before you feel you stop thinking about your rib cage. One thing that you can decide, it's not like you're getting better. No reason why you shouldn't continue to get better. You can buy a rib belt. It's a Velcro band, elastic band that you can put around the rib cage that just adds some. It's like giving somebody a crutch after they sprained an ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to cinch it up real tight, but it just gives you that area a little bit of support when you're going to be more active. You can get it at a drugstore. And so if I was going to recommend anything, that's a recommend. Now, if you go back and try your workout and you get a flare-up again, that's when I would go see a physical therapist and have them examine your back as well as the rib cage. Then there may be something that they can do specifically to loosen up whatever's tight or whatever's locked up on you, if in fact that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not planning on doing workouts this week because, one of the 2 days my therapist is going to be out of town anyway. So I said, we'll give it one more week, and then I will try again on the 22nd of April.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that to me that would be a good time frame. And when you go back, I wouldn't do everything all at once. I would do things at maybe half to 60% of your usual intensity in terms of repetitions and how the speed of the activity. So kind of transition back into your workout should help you get to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
And we have an email from Kristen in Madison. She says, I have had pain where my shoulder meets my neck for several years. It's not constant, but when it happens, it's very sharp pain, similar to descriptions I have read about relating to nerve pain. When I roll my shoulders, they make a cracking, grinding sound. I also have constant large knots in this area that never seem to go away. My doctor recommended that I strengthen my chest muscles, but this has not worked at all. Any idea that what could be going on, and what kind of medical help should I seek, as my regular doctor has not been much help?
Yeah. I think if Kristen has not seen a physical therapist, I would highly recommend it. The cracking and grinding with moving shoulder blades, like Lori talked about before, is not unusual, any more unusual than when we squat, our knees pop and crack a little bit. But it's more of the sharp pain that she's getting with the shoulder and neck. It can be a matter of not just muscles that are weak, but muscles that are too tight. And oftentimes, chest muscles are too tight, which pull people into a forward shoulder and a forward head posture. And that can throw off how the neck moves on the chest and on the shoulder area. So oftentimes, there's a combination of flexibility and strengthening and some postural things that need to be worked on in order for symptoms like this to go away. And as the postural corrects itself, then a lot of these knots should start resolving over time as well.
Okay. Good luck to Kristen. And on to Mike in Genesee. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. I had a meniscus repaired in beginning of September, and I'm 47 years old and play basketball about 2 to 3 times a week still. And I had also stretched out my ACL, the doctor said, or said that it looked pretty lax. When I was 24 years old, I had a similar injury playing softball and actually had a partial tear in my ACL that they didn't repair. They basically casted me from foot to hip for about 8 weeks and then had me do pretty extensive physical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically did a similar injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having pain. About 6 weeks later, I went back and played. They told me I could go as soon as 3, but I didn't really feel up to it at that point. And I'm having still pain on that outside of the knee, just where the kneecap ends.
Mm-hmm.
If you take it straight to the outside,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of runs down almost my shin,
mm-hmm.
at times. And I'm wondering if it's just overuse and if I just need to take time off to get inflammation down, or if you have any other suggestions.
Yes, I do. yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Did they do a meniscus repair or a meniscectomy?
Well, I'm pretty sure it was just a repair, and I feel stupid not knowing the answer to that.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure it was just a repair.
Okay. My guess is they probably did a meniscectomy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if they let you go back at 3 weeks, they're not going to let you go back and play basketball 3 weeks on a meniscus repair.
Okay.
So here's what's happening more than likely. After you tear or stretch your ACL, the next structure that helps stabilize your knee is your meniscus. So now you've both torn and stretched your ACL, and you've lost your meniscus, so now your knee is more unstable. And one of the classic places that you feel pain when you have an ACL unstable knee is at your lateral joint line because you slide on it.
Okay.
So I would suggest asking your doctor to see a physical therapist for some exercises for knee stabilization. You need a knee stabilization program, a dynamic stabilization program, to train your muscles how to stabilize your knee. And you can learn how to do that. Apparently, you learned it fairly well the first time.
Yeah, I wore a, what they used to call at that time a Joe
Namath brace.
Sure. Right.
I
wore that for a couple of months playing handball and basketball.
Yeah.
And in a semi-competitive league, and then went for about 15 years without having to wear anything on it. And,
But now you have new mechanics at your knee, so you have to relearn how to stabilize your knee given your new mechanical status.
Okay. I appreciate the help. Thank you.
Bet.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And Nikki in Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Nikki.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a musician. And I've had problems with my hands before, but 3 weeks ago I had some kind of significant trauma. I had my whole right thumb shut and locked in the car door.
Oh.
I wasn't able to pull it out, so we had to unlock the door, and I got my hand out. And ended up going to the emergency room where they took some x-rays. They couldn't determine if it was fractured or not, so I went back the next day to a hand surgeon to get an x-ray, and she also said that it wasn't broken. So for the past 3 weeks I've been a soft, like, neoprene kind of brace, I think. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying not to wear it all the time because I'm trying to get it strengthened back up, but I haven't been able to play for 3 weeks. And so I guess I'm just wondering, if it's not broken, you know, what could be wrong with it?
What's your instrument, by the way?
I play the harp.
The harp, okay.
And I notice most, like, when I bend my thumb, that it kind of pulls into the hand, like towards the hand, doesn't bend down straight. And I also notice, like, I have difficulty, like pinching things, and I don't really notice pain except for when I've been using it a lot, and then, you know, after a while, I'll be like, wow, like, my thumb is hurting now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unstable, she did say that I am kind of a little bit double-jointed, but I don't know how unstable it should or shouldn't be. So.
Right. Well, it's a couple things. The fact that there's no fracture is a good thing, but lots of other tissue trauma can occur, and I'm sure it did with the mechanism of injury. You know, you can bruise a bone, you can bruise soft tissue structures. There must be a little bit of swelling or a little bit of swelling in that area as well, which can lead to less stability along with some stiffness and soreness. The splint that you were given is a good idea, at least for a couple of weeks. But, Nikki, especially considering your vocation, by seeing a certified hand therapist would be really good for you. Where they could constantly update your splint, modify it when needed, and make sure you're on a rehab program to regain the flexibility and stability at that joint for everyday activities, plus while you're playing the harp.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I recommend at this stage, and they should be able to help you quite a bit at this stage. But I'm not surprised you're still having some pain and some soreness considering what happened to your thumb.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Nikki. Julie in Galesville, you have a quick question.
Yes, I do. I had a knee replacement, total knee replacement surgery done, and it's been over a year now, almost a year and a half, and from the knee down, it's rotated out. I've gone back to my surgeon quite a few times, and it's still swollen, and she always says, well, we'll wait till the swelling goes down and come back and see me in a couple of months. And then one time I called her about it, and because it was a lot of pain, and she said she had talked to some other colleagues and perhaps she had put the wrong size knee in.
Oh.
Is that a possibility for it to be turning out like that?
Yes, as I said a little bit earlier, it's a difficult problem putting in, finding the right prosthesis, getting it matched and balanced with your soft tissues, keeping it stable front to back, medial lateral. I mean, the knee joint has very little, if no intrinsic stability. So it's very difficult to get it balanced. So if your surgeon says it's possible, yes, I would agree that it's possible. In the meantime, if you haven't been in a pool for some rehabilitation, that's where I'd go to rehabilitate. It'll help with the swelling. It'll help keep you strong without putting a lot of weight on that joint. And then I would continue to follow with your surgeon.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Lori and Bill, we're out of time again. Time flies.
It does fly.
Yeah.
Good calls today.
Yeah, great stuff.
Excellent calls. And you'll be back on May 19th.
Indeed.
And we will do this all over again. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Lori Tyne Brody is a senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. And Bill Boisenault is an associate professor in physical therapy at the University of Wisconsin Medical School. Really fun to have them with us all over a lot of painful kinds of problems out there today. I hope, and I'm pretty sure, they helped. So glad to have them with us. They'll be back May 19th. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Net.